you, Jonga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, July 21st, 2016. I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Dimyake Mwakalielie. Here are our top stories this evening. War veterans back sacked leader Chris Muchangwa, saying they are prepared to face President Mugabe head on.
The main issue is the firing of Chris Muchangwa as our chairman after we democratically elected him. People are trying to understand whether this act of firing Chris is because he did something wrong or is it because some people want to decapitate us.
MDCT President Morgan Tsvangirai is taken to court for appointing his two new vice presidents.
We filed the application at the High Court in which we are seeking that the High Court declare that the appointment of the two, Mr. Nelson Chamisa and Michaela Smizuri, was not in accordance with the MDC Constitution.
Labour and employer organizations say the government should address Zimbabwe's economic crisis to curb human trafficking. And beaten presidential aspirant Teddy Cruz roils the Republican Party convention. These stories and so much more coming up. Stay tuned. Movement for Democratic Change party leader Morgan Tsvangirai was today dragged to court by two party activists who were challenging his appointment of Nelson Chamisa and Elias Muzuri as his deputies. The complainants are Tsvangirai praise singer Patson Murimoga and one George Rice, who wanted the High Court to nullify the appointments, arguing they violate the party constitution. Their lawyer, Junanai Macharaga, filed papers with the Harare High Court today. The respondents in this matter are Mr. Tsvangirai himself, Mr. Chamisa, Mr. Muzuri, the MDCT as a party, and its chairperson, Lovemore Moyo. Mr. Tsvangirai now has three deputies, including Tokozani Kupe, whose support base is said to be angry with the MDCT leader. Tsvangirai's lawyer, Innocent Chagonda, told Studio 7 that they were served with the court papers today. VOA reporter Ntungamile Nkomo reached lawyer Macharaga for the plaintiffs, who says Mr. Tsvangirai clearly violated the party constitution, which says his deputies must be appointed at Congress.
We filed the application at High Court in which we are seeking that the High Court declare that the appointment of the two, Mr. Nelson Chamisa and Michaela Smizuri, was not in accordance with the MDC Constitution.
When will it be heard?
Mr. Tsvangirai, together with Mrs. Nelson Chamisa and Ms. Ella Smizuri, have for 10 days to respond to the application to which we have actually served them this afternoon. So the progress of this case will be known in 10 days' time.
From your own reading and understanding of the MDCT Constitution, what does it say exactly about the appointments of such senior positions by the MDCT leader?
Without necessarily preempting the contents of our matter that is already before the court, the substance of our argument is that the position of the deputy president starts with the nomination of the person to the office of the deputy president from the provinces. And then at the Congress of the MDC, that is when the two then be elected. So they have to start with a provincial nomination and then followed by a congressional election. The deputy president's position is never an appointed position in the MDC constitution.
But Mr. Tsvangirai and his surrogates are arguing that these appointments are above board.
Mr. Tsvangirai must understand that the party has got a constitution, and the constitution provides that the provinces have to nominate the deputy president, and the Congress has to vote. Surely all these powers cannot rest in the hands of one person. And after all, we have a constitution that is there. The last one that was amended in 2014, November, in the last Congress.
Lawyers Vanai Macharaga for litigants Patson Murumoga and George Rice were suing Mr. Tsvangirai. For perspectives, Ntungamile Nkomo reached analyst Nkululeko Sibanda, who says Tsvangirai made a big blunder.
What is happening here and what is surprising is that the president has in fact taken a step that further cracks the party and gives impetus to the move by those who oppose to him to actually take a step against him and to actually defy him. And I do not know why Mr. Tsvangirai would have done that. I think he would have been better off finding ways or finding individuals who would certainly not be challenged by anybody, who would help him unify the party behind him. It may therefore be that the president thought that he had to do this in order to deal with a much bigger problem than the opposition that will arise from his appointment.
Could the party be headed for yet another split?
I think it is possible that the party may split even further. There are some people already speculating that the move itself was designed to stop those who are appointed from splintering or from joining somebody else. So it may be that President Tsvangirai has decided that a split by those who were opposed to the current appointments is better than the split, split if it had been carried out by those who have been appointed and those who are aligned to them. But I think that the impetus for a split is pretty high, and that there are movements on the ground indicating that some people are thinking about completely defying Morgan Tsvangirai, including those that have gone to court as we speak. There are certainly a lot of people on the ground working alongside Ms. Kupe who are willing to defy the president if need be.
Political analyst Dr. Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University in England speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamile Nkomo. Zimbabwe's war veterans of the 1970s say they will continue to back their leader, Christopher Mchangwa, who was recently recalled from parliament by President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party following his attacks on the Generation 40 faction of the party, alleged to be trying to pave the way for First Lady Grace Mugabe to succeed the aged president. They say nobody will stop them from discussing succession issues in the party. Mchangwa was initially suspended from the ruling party after he was accused of fanning factionalism. His war veterans group recently pledged support for protesters calling for social, economic and political transformation in Zimbabwe. Some of the war veterans say they want the president to step down, claiming that he is now a liability to Zimbabweans. Reporter Patricia Mudadigwa has more details.
In a highly charged meeting at Railton Sports Club in Harare, the war veterans declared that they are fully behind Mchangwa despite his sacking from parliament and cabinet. The war veterans alleged that Mchangwa is being victimized for speaking against corruption. Spokesperson for the National Liberation War Veterans Association, Douglas Maia, told Studio 7 their leadership has been victimized over the years for speaking against corruption. Maia claimed that Zimbabwe's ministers are all corrupt.
We have talked about corruption, and not one corrupt person has ever been suspended or fired from ministerial positions. And the most corrupt people are those in the ministerial position. Next to every one of them has got a deal, a corrupt deal from his ministry.
There was no immediate government reaction over these allegations. Maia said the war veterans are also angry because despite the so-called Great Indaba they held a couple of months ago with their patron, President Robert Mugabe, all the resolutions made at the event have not yet been implemented. He said if ZANU-PF is sidelining them because they are now being seen as senior citizens, then all old people in the party should leave.
We discussed after 3 days of deliberation at the Indaba about our welfare, about the state of the party, about the heritage. Nothing has changed. So what does that mean? It means we're no longer relevant. But if we are no longer relevant because we are old, so everyone who is old must go. If it is about the age, then how do we become irrelevant? And yet others remain there who are very old, older than us.
Abraham Tsikwa, a Mashonaland East representative, suggested to the meeting that war veterans should boycott this year's Heroes Day celebrations to be held next month as a protest over the way the government is treating them.
We are just suggesting that we should boycott Heroes celebration. There is no use why we should celebrate that Heroes. After all this suffering, which we war veterans we are doing together with our masses, people are suffering. My queues, my banks, queues everywhere. People are suffering. Saka, what is there to celebrate? Nothing. It's mocking the dead people.
Another war veteran, Hoin Bila, vice chairperson of Harare province, said war veterans have been marginalized and ill-treated for too long. Bilai encouraged the war veterans to take the government head on.
We have been neglected. We have been marginalized. We are a vulnerable group of people. If you look at the history from 1980, all we have done is to hold meetings, which are not achieving anything. And we are fooled by the government just to make promises. And we have been living for the past 36 years relying on hope. And we are saying that should come to an end. Enough is enough. And Mutsangwa is not going to go anywhere.
A female war veteran who only wanted to be identified as Neanda Nyakasikana said while they support President Mugabe and would back him in the 2018 presidential election, they are disturbed by the continuous firing of their leadership.
The main issue is the firing of Chris Mutangwa as our chairman after we democratically elected him. So people are trying to understand whether this act of firing Chris is because he did something wrong or is it because some people want to decapitate us.
The war veterans allege that corruption by government ministers has brought the country to its knees. Dennis Lovu, another war veteran, stressed that they want government to take stern measures against all corrupt state officials.
As war veterans, we are saying all those people who are involved in corruption, they must be hanged. Simple, they must be shot. Actual firing squad, they must go to a firing squad.
The war veterans also called for an end to victimization over speaking out on President Mugabe's succession. They claimed they have the right to speak on who they want to take over when Mr. Mugabe leaves office. The war veterans meeting, which is still underway, will come up with a communique on the actions they will take over the isolation by ZANU-PF government. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Patricia Mundadigwa.
Employer and labor organizations today piled pressure on President Mugabe's government to address the country's economic problems in a bid to reduce cases of the trafficking of Zimbabwean workers. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Addressing a one-day conference on migration trends for domestic workers from Africa to the Arab states held in Harare today, Hapolang Pororo, who is the International Labour Organization country director for Zimbabwe and Namibia, said Zimbabwe should address its economic situation urgently in order to put a stop to the trafficking of its workforce.
We recall the Kuwait situation, which brought to the eyes of many in the country the not-so-green pastures for some of the Zimbabweans that had sought employment in Kuwait. To fully understand the circumstances that led to this unfortunate situation requires that one has a full picture of migration governance systems in Asia, particularly in the Gulf states, with their kafala system. Under the kafala system, a migrant worker's immigration status is legally bound to an individual employer or sponsor for their contract period. It is such kinds of systems, whether formal or informal, documented or undocumented, and or legal or illegal, that give rise to ILO action to protect migrant workers and particularly migrant domestic workers.
Pororo's remarks come at a time when an estimated 200 women were reportedly trafficked to Kuwait on the guise of being offered lucrative employment. Some of them were allegedly abused by their employers. Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe Executive Director John Mufukare echoed Pororo's sentiments.
Probably things got so bad in Zimbabwe that people could be fooled by any promise of anything at all. Because for people to get themselves in a situation where you are going to an unknown country to do an unknown job can only be described as an act of desperation.
A representative of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, Jogonia Mahoba, said many Zimbabwean workers were going abroad in search of greener pastures as a result of the country's underperforming economy. He added that economies of countries affected by brain drain usually get weaker every day if authorities do not find ways of addressing the economic plunge.
Since the past decade, economies in Southern Africa, particularly in Zimbabwe and Lesotho, have deteriorated, causing the majority of workers, including domestic workers in these countries, to migrate to South Africa and other well-to-do countries. Generally, domestic workers are exposed to various forms of exploitation and vulnerabilities, especially when they migrate without proper documentation.
Permanent Secretary in the Labour Ministry, Ngoni Masoka, said authorities were doing all they can to ensure that the country's economy gets back on track.
My ministry is set to finalize consultations on the National Labour Migration Policy Framework before it is tabled in Cabinet. The policy framework mainly seeks to enhance labour migration governance to ensure that Zimbabwean migrant workers have access to decent work, including through greater monitoring of private employment agencies.
Masoka also told Studio 7 that 13 Zimbabwean women arrived in the country today following their repatriation from Kuwait, where they went in search of work as domestic workers but were later abused. This brings the number of Zimbabwean women repatriated from Kuwait to 102 this year alone. The meeting was attended by delegates from government, ILO, ZCTU, MCOS, International Organization for Migration, and others. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The relationship between religion and the HIV epidemic has not always been healthy, but at the ongoing International AIDS Conference in South Africa, activists and some religious figures say they're trying to patch things up and work together against AIDS. At the conference taking place in Durban, religious leaders are trying to make room for God in the fight against the virus as the clergy held regular interfaith sessions. Critics say the Catholic Church has marginalized millions of people who need help and acceptance, basing their positive HIV status on poor morals.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, we'll take a closer look at the role that social media has played in Zimbabwe's political processes, like the protests. But first, a look at regional. But first, a look at regional and international news. Turkey says it will suspend the European Convention on Human Rights during the three-month state of emergency it declared to purge perpetrators of last week's failed coup. Division instead of unity was a dominant narrative at the Republican National Convention today, as Texas Senator Ted Cruz's criticisms of presidential nominee Donald Trump spilled over into the final day of the four-day event. Speaking to his home state delegation Thursday at the convention in the Midwestern city of Cleveland, Ohio, Cruz said he will not cast his presidential vote for Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton, but declined to say if he will vote for Trump. He said he was not in the habit of supporting people who attack his wife and father, adding that he refuses to act like, quote, a servile puppy. During a grueling campaign for the Republican presidential nomination, Trump launched personal attacks against Cruz's wife, Heidi, and father, Rafael. Cruz's remarks followed his Wednesday's convention speech that drew boos when he failed to include a clear endorsement for Trump. Cruz was one of the last competitors in the contentious race for the nomination, during which Trump nicknamed him Lying Ted. Republican presidential nominee Trump is set to address the convention this evening with a view of uniting the party before the November election. Studio 7's Chioneso Jani speaks with VOA's Sahabu Aliu, who is attending the convention, about Cruz's move to rock the Republican Party.
The whole audience expects to hear from Mr. Donald Trump, who is the nominee, to deliver a speech to accept his nomination as the candidate for the Republican Party in the upcoming general election in November. This is primarily the biggest event for today.
From the reactions of the audience, did Ted Cruz confuse the Republican supporters?
Well, to some extent, yes, because there's a simmering differences within the camps of the Republican Party. But this year, the division is very prominent, and especially during the campaign, it almost became personal between him and Donald Trump. So a lot of the Republicans assumed that this is going to be a makeover, and so they will kiss and move on, but it didn't happen. However, Ted Cruz, in reaction to the reaction he got from the audience and the hierarchy of the Republican Party, said he had beforehand told Donald Trump that he is not going to specifically endorse it.
What is the impact of Ted Cruz's move on the Republican Party?
It just says that all is not well within the camps. Especially he is the next to Donald Trump in terms of vote, not significant in terms of delegates, but at the same time, he was the one that at least challenged Donald Trump. So it means his supporters may decide not to vote for Donald Trump. His supporters may decide to stay home.
What do you think Cruz meant when he said, vote your conscience?
With that statement, he's telling the people that they are still free. They are not bound to vote for Trump, which means there's no loyalty. They vote for their conscience regardless of party affiliation.
That was VOA's Sahabu Aliyu of VOA's House of Service speaking with Studio 7's Chioneso Ojani from Cleveland, Ohio. Now, Dan Moyo of the MDCT tells Studio 7's Chioneso Ojani that Zimbabweans should emulate what is taking place at the Republican Convention in terms of freedom of speech.
There seems to be some division within the Republican Party because we noticed yesterday Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, who was also contesting the presidential nomination, did not endorse the eventual leader, Donald Trump. So that speaks volumes about the unity within the Republican Party.
Are these conventions similar to what happens in Zimbabwe?
Not at all. In Zimbabwe, usually we have what we call congresses within parties where they elect their officials, but we don't have a similar system as we're seeing in the U.S. where you have a number of potential candidates running against each other during the primary process, which then culminates in the convention that eventually nominates the candidate that will run for the party.
Is there anything which Zimbabweans can learn from the Republicans' party convention?
Well, they can learn that the voice of the people is important, because even though Donald Trump is not popular among a lot of the Republicans, but nonetheless, he was voted by the people during the primary process, and therefore the will of the people has to be respected. I think in general, Zimbabweans have to learn a lot about democracy, about freedom of speech, freedom of association, and being able to air your views without fear that the police will knock at your door. We are lacking that in Zimbabwe. And hence we have remained behind, and freedom is remained an illusion.
That was Dan Moyo of the MDCT speaking with Studio 7's Chioneso Ojani. Some Zimbabweans are known to be tech-savvy, and of late they have been using social media in an effort to effect social, political and economic transformation in the country. Protests staged by citizens like Pastor Evan Mawarire of the hashtag This Flag Movement and Tajamuka campaign appear to have been spearheaded through social media like Facebook and Twitter and the messaging application WhatsApp. This appears to have unsettled the government, as Zimbabwe's Information Technology Minister Supa Mandiwanzira is being quoted by a South African news organization as warning the country's social media users that their phones can be tracked if they spread messages that President Mugabe's government deems abusive. But Mandiwanzira is on record as saying that the government will not block social media like in some authoritarian states. Is social media a tool for effecting political transformation in Zimbabwe? For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached Nigel Magamu of 263 Chat, an award-winning Zimbabwe media company, encouraging dialogue using social media, guest blogs, live events, and providing training and social media strategies, and Kolwani Nyati, editor of the Independent Standard newspaper. Nyati says social media is playing a critical role in enhancing the necessary transformation in Zimbabwe, though at times such media can be destructive.
You know, what has happened in Zimbabwe is that due to the economic situation and the restrictive media laws that we have very few the official media channels. And because of social media, people have found channels outside the mainstream media. And social media is a wider reach than the media. The difference with mainstream media and social media is that there's that feedback aspect. It's no longer one way. People can exchange messages. They can generate their own stories that they debate on social media. And this means that information travels much faster, and there's a lot of freedom in that space. And this is why maybe it's easier for activists to push through their messages than with the traditional media.
Mr. Mugamu, do you think that social media is actually having an impact in terms of Zimbabwe's politics?
I think it is. Just watching the ruling party and their reaction to what is taking place. This flag initially, I remember about a month ago, was, it's just this social media thing. It's not going to go anywhere. And all of a sudden, we started to see people recording videos from beyond the urban areas. So something caught on. I think that our leaders didn't expect this thing, this flag and this movement, as it were, to grow. And it's grown. Now, you know, there's a funeral this week, and the president himself mentioned Pastor E by name to say, look, there's this guy, and this is what's going on. So that tells me that they're paying attention. I've spoken to a number of people who work for the state media who've often said, you know, they often believed that they controlled the media by the sheer fact that they have control of TV and a lot of the radio and obviously have a presence in print. And they, you know, I was talking with one gentleman and he told me that they thought they knew how people felt. But what's happened is social media has shown them that there's this other side. And like what my brother here is saying is there's this feedback mechanism. I can tweet something. I can put something on Facebook. I can share it on Instagram. I can share it on WhatsApp. And I can communicate and dialogue with others. And we can discuss this thing in real time. And that's the beauty of social media. So, look, it's here to stay. And we wait to see what happens with their reaction.
But, Mr. Nyati, you know, there are dangers here, especially when people start cooking things. So what are the primary dangers, you know, in using social media in Zimbabwe in terms of promoting these protests and all those kind of things?
You know, there's always that danger in an environment where information is restricted. People end up speculating. Like today, you know, in the past 2 days, the government hasn't paid civil servants. And there are a lot of notices that are flying around where people are announcing that several pay days for civil servants. And in the end, you don't know what's true. I mean, when there's a vacuum, people come up with all sorts of things to fill the vacuum. And that is one of the first challenges about social media. With the first day away, there were, you know, people sending each other messages on how to make petrol bombs and such things. So that's when social media is those consequences that are not intended, you know. It's for a good cause, but they can also be dangerous. You know?
Mr. Mugamu, the state has been, you know, talking a lot to the effect that your message can be actually monitored. Is that possible?
You know, I've spoken to experts in particular, with particular focus on WhatsApp, and I've also asked the question because, you know, I've always felt that WhatsApp is a safe space, and what I've understood is these are threats, and WhatsApp is encrypted. So as long as you and I are communicating with each other and you've got the most up-to-date WhatsApp and I've got the most up-to-date WhatsApp on my phone, you should be fine. If you leave your phone, of course, with Facebook and Twitter and others, these are all based on your, you know, the way you access. So either you're on a tablet or some mobile device or your laptop, and if someone has access to those gadgets, then of course they can access your accounts. You know, people always suggest that you must change your password every so often, just to keep people out of your account and safe. So there are ways, but I think, you know, on social media, you just need to be aware that of the dangers of being on social media. There are hackers out there.
That was Nigel Mugamu of 263 Chat. You also heard from Kolwani Nyati, editor of the Standard newspaper. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Is reminding you now to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today's hosts of the Women's Roundtable, Praxedes Jeremiah and Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye, will be talking with you, listeners, about the ongoing protests, not only in Zimbabwe now, but around the world. What impact do you think they're making on Zimbabwe? Please join the conversation by calling 001 202 001-202-619-2077. That number again, 001-202-619-2077. Remember that we're also streaming live on Facebook, so please make sure that you join in the conversation that way. Quick recap of our top stories today. War veterans today backed sacked leader Chris Muchangwa, saying that they're prepared to face President Mugabe head on. And that's our news this evening. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Ntungamile Nkomo. I'm Dimyake Mwakalyelye here in Washington, saying good night.